On this edition of Our Town, as many of you might know, that Boomer Wright has decided to retire, and therefore it has opened up the seat for the legislature in this district. And one of the candidates for that seat is Troy Cribbins, and Troy is joining me today. And how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. It's good to meet you. Tell everybody a little bit. Let's get a little bit about your background, what you're doing, and then we'll get into what you want to accomplish.
Sure. I mean, I'll go way back. I'll try to not make it take all day long.
That's fine. Whatever it takes.
You know, my family homesteaded in East County and Coos County, an area called Bridge. There's not much left there. They were timber families. They all owned their own logging trucks, cousins, uncles, almost, you know, all of my family. My parents moved to Portland, which is where I was raised. And then eventually I found my way back here to raise my family. My wife's family, their family, they are the Wilcutts and the Slacks for the individuals that might listen to this that live in Deadwood and Triangle Lake. And they were the same thing. They had a cattle ranch and timber ground. And so both my wife and I's families roots run deep in this rural community. I don't think either of us thought we'd come back here, but there's a pull here, right? So at some point, I decided to go to college. I got my doctorate in physical therapy and then came back to our community again to raise our kids. I've worked in the healthcare field almost 30 years now. And a good portion of that, I've worked across the scope. I've worked in hospitals, care facilities, outpatient clinics. And then probably the last 15 years, I either have run my own business, a physical therapy staffing company, to provide services to all those facilities. And then probably the last 10 years running a home health and hospice agency. So, you know, in that time frame, I've had a firsthand a knowledge of understanding, and I'll step it up a level, of what the economic downturn of our communities had on our community. I see it firsthand with access to healthcare, education, all of those things. So brings us to now. The reason I'm running is I live in Coos Bay. I see what the detriment of our state's rapid expansion and over-regulatory and over-tax burden has done to our rural communities. I would like to be a voice in the legislature to move that needle back a little bit. My personal view is that if we can improve our economic status, that has an immediate indirect effect on both our education systems and our healthcare systems. In municipal government, there is no extra money, and they're mandated where most of that money goes. The issue is the expansion of government into areas that they mandate but can't fund. So then that puts a burden on our smaller communities to be able to fund those things that they're required to, like fire and police and roads and all those things that we see on a daily basis. That's my goal, is to improve the day-to-day lives of our coastal rural communities. I have been fortunate. My wife and I have been fortunate. We've worked hard. I'd like to see that opportunity available for everyone that lives in these communities. We live here because we want to live here, right? It's a choice. There shouldn't be a negative connotation to it. We don't deserve less. We don't deserve second-tier health care. We don't deserve second-tier business opportunities. We deserve first-tier across the board. We have hardworking families, good communities, and we should see the fruits of our labor. And I think many times we're being dictated from areas not in our control of how and what we can do.
A couple of things. You know, coming from a logging family, you've got that background tie in there. We've obviously seen the revenue, you know, cut from that went to support some of our roads and schools and things like that. It's a big deal. Got a lot of companies that do logging that are struggling right now. Being that the legislature is currently in a minority, that's going to be a struggle. What do you see the way to discuss that with your potential colleagues in the legislature to try to change some of that? Now, I know some of it's federally mandated, so there's not a lot we can do. But as far as the state level goes.
Yeah, I mean, I am at my core pragmatic. I'm mission vision. I don't have to be right. I want to get it right. So underlying that, my ideology may be one thing, but I am fully aware of when I go to the Capitol that we are in the super minority. And I think someone told me this the other day, and I'm going to steal it from them. Sometimes our goal is to make bad bills less bad. I think it's imperative that you're in the building having the conversations, and you got to just keep pushing. You got to keep taking a little bit here and a little bit there. And I'm playing for the long game. I don't think that anything I'm going to do in the next year is going to flip that pendulum. But we've got to be there, and we've got to be there fighting for those timber families, those fishery families that are all being impacted by that expansive regulation.
Another thing we've seen, I saw a recent file come out from the state about lottery money and how much lottery money is funded. Yet I don't think the rural communities that you would represent are seeing a lot of the benefit from that. That's something that could possibly change were the right people to get in there. What do you?
Yeah, I'll be honest on that. I don't know a lot about lottery funds or where they go. I believe some of that goes to school funding and then different programs, and I don't know how it's dispersed and, you know, what share rural communities get or don't get. But I would like to look at any opportunity. I mean, my biggest push is to at some point I felt like you brought up the timber, and when the timber industry was hard hit, that had such a negative ripple effect across our community economically through the education system. And we could speak to each of those separately if you'd like, but they have an impact. But at some point, we've become communities that are just waiting for someone else to fix us. And what we need is the freedom to fix ourselves, you know, for a lack of a better word. We have bright, hardworking people here that just need an opportunity to be successful without state legislator impacting that in a negative fashion.
Like the CAT tax.
Like the CAT tax. And I've spoken to many of our small businesses in Coos Bay Downcore. They struggle on a daily basis. The Coos Bay Downtown Association is a strong group of local businesses that work hard every day to try to support themselves and that community. But it's an uphill struggle every day. And, you know, for lack of better reason, many of them essentially bought themselves a job. You know, we're limited by volume of people walking through the doors. And so then what revenue they do get is then, I was trying to think of the right word, but, you know, taken through CAT tax or different right. revenue.
Yeah. You could use the word stolen. I'm not so sure that's accurate, right. But, you know.
I was trying to be polite.
Yeah, I know. It kind of feels that way sometimes. Yeah. Down in Coos Bay, there's, some movement down there with the rails and with the port and everything. There's been some money that's been allocated to help fund that. That's certainly part of the district there. What are you seeing down there that you would like to see better?
Specifically, we're talking the PCIP, Intermodal Port Project. I am a huge proponent of that. I feel like we need a large economic driver. We need some level of like manufacturing that brings in family-based jobs. Those indirectly then provide labor force that make family-based jobs, can afford to buy a house, have commercial insurance that helps our healthcare industry, buy homes, which helps our development, helps general funds for infrastructure. I mean, I can just go across the board what good jobs do for a community. I would love to see that. It's going to take a lot of work. We need to do it right. I think sometimes our communities in the past have kind of chased these one size big opportunities that's going to fix us, right? I think we've grown from that. I think we realize where we are geographically and what a great resource we have, and we shouldn't be embarrassed about it. So when we court a large manufacturer industry to come in here, we should be saying, we'd love to have you here, but it's going to be on our terms. It's going to fit our community. And I think we can do that. And so far, what I've seen from this project, that's the intent. There's going to be a lot of infrastructure with that, with all the work that's going to need to be done on the rails. There will have to be some channeling. There will be environmental concerns that will have to be addressed. But I think as long as those are addressed, those shouldn't be a negative to stopping the project. I mean, and in that vein, we could open up a whole nother conversation about our land use policies and how they impact negatively any development that we may or may not want to follow through, pursue in these areas.
You talked earlier about how Oregon is expanding and the expansion is causing problems on rural communities. One of the things that's a big deal is education, obviously. We have a school here in Florence that needs either a massive remodel, which some people think would be the way to go, or a brand new school, which when it was built subpar back in the day. Yet there is no money coming from outside the community. So the community has to fund that. And it seems like maybe, obviously there's a limited amount of money out there, but there should be some way for the state to help communities like this that need new schools and stuff. How do you feel about maybe allocating some money for that kind of stuff? It would have to be a whole new bill and everything because there's absolutely nothing coming from it now.
Yeah. 40,000 foot viewpoint. Our kids are our future, right? And whether you have them or not, you have to realize that their impact and their role is what's going to carry on the next generations. We are doing them a huge disservice with the education system that we have. And I say that saying I know good superintendents, I know great teachers that are working really hard, but the system is challenged. Our graduation rates are in the 70s, between 70 and 75, depending on what we're talking about, Sayula or Coos Bay. That's not good enough. And then our proficiency rates are in the mid 40%. That's not good enough. We're not doing our kids any favors. I don't know what the short-term fix is. The long-term fix is to decrease regulation and the tax burden in our community so we can be economically vibrant to have that money and those funds to support our schools and our systems. I think we see this rise of charter schools, which is a venue where parents feel like they have a much closer opportunity to impact their kids' education. And I think those are great resources. I think if we were paying attention to our public education and keeping it with the eye on teaching, we wouldn't find ourselves in that position of having to worry about that. And this is an ideological viewpoint, is that I feel like we have set the bar to the lowest common denominator. And I don't know we're doing anyone any favors. And this is really general, and again, it's just my personal philosophy, that you have 10% of the kids that are going to excel, that are going to excel regardless. You've got 10% of those kids that are not going to do well regardless. That squishy 80% is where we should direct most of our focus, and we want them to reach as high as they can. Now, they may not make it, which is okay, but we want them to reach. And I feel like the state has this almost paternalistic, like we have to make it easy for everyone to get through. And not only are we doing those kids that are struggling a disservice, but we're really hurting those kids that just need a little push to do well. And whatever it is, whether that's trades or academic or, you know, across the board. So to answer your question, I don't know what a quick fix is. You're right. When we set up budgets, if you're in private industry, when you own a business, you have depreciation costs built in. You're thinking about replacement costs. That's part of your budget. So that when your capital comes to its end of its life, you have money to replace that. In our public systems, we do a terrible job of that. We throw this money out there with no thought of, so what are we going to do when that wears out? How are we going to replace that? And then we come to the citizens for a fee or a tax or a bond. And when we're in a community that's economically depressed, there is no money. You know, in our constituents' defense, they're taxed to their max already. So we've got to change the underlying system of allowing our communities to grow and build with the wonderful natural resources we have here, timber, fishery, tourism is part of that. And then that in turn helps our small businesses thrive and be successful and grow.
Now, this is not a soapbox here, but I just want to say, you know, we talk about not having money for new schools, not having money for education, that. And yet when a large company like a tech company or an Amazon comes in, the first thing they want to do is give them all these tax breaks, give them all this benefit just so we can get them in. And yet then we lose so much of that we could be going to the schools. How do you feel about that? Do you feel like we should stop doing that? Or do you feel we need a certain amount of these industry giants to come into Oregon in order to, I don't know, what is the reason?
Yeah, I think there's a balance, right? The LNG project, whether you liked it or didn't like it, I thought we had done a pretty good job of saying, okay, you can defer taxes, but we want X amount of dollars that we're going to use to put back into our schools and our economic development. And that was sort of my point, is we don't just have to accept whatever comes here. we are worth being part of. We have a good community. Those businesses should want to be here. So we should expect them to help support the community, be part of the community. We don't want anyone to come in, at least in my opinion, we don't want those large giants to just come in and only take. We want them to return too. We want them to be part of the community. So I think there's a balance. Yes, I mean, I think big tax deferments are just part of that negotiation, but I think you can negotiate, you know, funds to help support schools to jumpstart them.
You mentioned earlier why you wanted to do this. Let me ask you, why now? What is it about this climate that makes it more palatable for you to want to come into it?
I don't know if it is palatable, but I've worked hard in a long time, and I've been fortunate. I feel like I want to give back, and I have the experience. I have the healthcare experience. I have the business experience. I have the life experience. I live right in the heart of this every day. I wake up and see it every day. I felt like I had something to give back, and I wanted to try. I wanted to be part of that conversation. I've been a Republican since I've made my first vote, and I don't know when it was, 1982 or something like that. And at the time, it was Ronald Reagan, and he said, and I'm going to mess this up, so don't hold me totally to it, but there isn't anything government can do that a private citizen can do better. I believe that. I believe that government is there to facilitate private industry. And we've kind of flipped that around.
Yeah. What and can you do for me has kind of been the,
right,
the new
right.
mantra.
And, you know, in the 80s and 90s, you know, we were talking about the tax breaks for the rich, and then there was always the government subsidies for the poor. And then as that started to become ingrained, then pretty soon the middle class is going, well, so where's my subsidies? Well, and I understand that as each individual group, but at some point we can't be everything for everyone, right? And that's not sustainable. When we're seeing that now, we have seen it in our rural communities for decades. But you're seeing it even now in bigger budgets like Eugene, Portland, San Francisco, you name the city, New York City. It's insane what they're trying to provide for everyone, for everything, and then wondering why there's no money for it. I think all of your listeners would see if they're running their private budget, there are a lot of neat things out there you'd love to have. But you got to pay your bills first. And unfortunately, the government doesn't subscribe to the same thing. We need to pay our bills, do the structural infrastructure things that government was intended to do first. And then if there's extra money and you think there's a social program that can benefit from it, we could have that discussion. But we've lost our way there. And we just every time somebody says, well, that's a good idea, we say, well, let's build a program for it. Measure 110 is a great example of that. Maybe ideologically, there was a good idea behind that. You didn't set it up right. You didn't implement it correctly, and it was a mess to the point where, you know, it was repealed. It's the same thing with the gas tax that's up right now. I think they're going to be voting on it today to move that referendum from November up to May. I believe the Department of Transportation is internally doing a pretty good job managing what money they have. It goes back to, we're taking all of that money that's coming into the government fund and we're sending it other places instead of bringing it back to those things that actual day-to-day citizens care about, like your roads, your police, your fire, your schools.
One last thing I want to talk about, want to ask you about, is right now in the legislature, they're looking at the transient lodging tax, which could possibly take away 60% of travel and tourism money that is designated for, you know, marketing, for growth, for business. How do you feel about that? You know, I mean, like you're talking about taking money from Peter to pay Paul, you know, it seems like. What's your stand on that?
I am opposed to that. Although I will say I understand what, I believe Tillamook's kind of one of the main proponents of that. I understand their point. But I think it's kind of a problem of their own success, right, from the TLT. The difficulty is, while you have had that volume, that success, many of our smaller rural communities are still working on that. And that's going to significantly impair them to get to that problem. I mean, I suppose you could look at it like that's a good problem to have. And I don't think that changing that structure to remove that fund to solve your issue helps the lion's share of the people that
It benefits.
That benefit from that, yes.
All right. Troy Cribbins running for the seat currently held by Boomer Wright, and the primary will be this May.
Correct.
And congratulations on your willingness to take this on. Appreciate you coming in here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you being here.